Sadie and Will Faust's move to a remote Maine island promised a fresh start. After Will's sister Alice commits suicide, they inherit her house and guardianship of her teenage daughter, Imogen. For Sadie, a doctor now working at the island clinic, this represents a chance to rebuild their marriage after Will's affair. Their sons, artistic Otto and energetic 7-year-old Tate, must adapt to this new environment alongside them. The house feels wrong from the beginning, gray and boxy outside, dark and dreary within. Their first encounter with 16-year-old Imogen sets an ominous tone. Dressed in black, with a shirt reading, "I want to die," she coldly tells Will to stay the fuck away. Any hope for normalcy shatters when sirens pierce the night and they learn their neighbor, Morgan Baines, has been murdered. In this small island community, fear spreads quickly, transforming their quiet street into a place of suspicion and dread. As Officer Berg investigates Morgan's murder, his focus increasingly turns towards Sadie. Despite her insistence she was home during the crime, Will's alibi for her isn't solid. More disturbing, Berg shows Sadie a photograph of Will and Morgan standing suspiciously close at a school event. The connections deepen when Sadie discovers Morgan was the sister of Aaron, Will's high school sweetheart, who died when her car plunged into a frozen pond. Will never mentioned this relationship, raising questions about what else he might be hiding. Meanwhile, Imogen shows Sadie a disturbing cell phone photo of her mother's suicide that reveals inconsistencies. The step stool in the attic was upright and out of reach, inconsistent with someone hanging themselves. The house itself seems to harbor secrets. Sadie finds violent drawings hidden in the attic, discovers a missing kitchen knife, and later unearths a blood-soaked washcloth in the laundry room. Most damning of all, the dogs dig up a buried boning knife in their backyard, matching the murder weapon used to kill Morgan Baines. As pressure mounts, Sadie experiences disturbing episodes of lost time and confusion. She finds herself in unfamiliar places with no memory of arriving, discovers receipts for clothing she doesn't remember buying, and encounters neighbors referencing conversations she can't recall. The truth emerges in fragments. Sadie suffers from dissociative identity disorder, DID, with distinct alternate personalities that take control. There's Camille, vivacious and impulsive, who maxes out credit cards and flirts at bars. Then there's Mouse, a terrified 6-year-old who draws disturbing pictures of dark closets and cages. These alters, developed as protection from childhood trauma, systematic abuse by her stepmother, Charlotte, whom Sadie has completely blocked from memory. Could one of her alters have killed Morgan? The evidence seems damning. Mud on her shoes matching soil from the crime scene, a missing hour during the estimated time of death, and Morgan clutching fabric from Sadie's sweater. Yet Sadie has no recollection of any crime. The gaps in her memory have become dangerous black holes. In a shocking twist, we discover Will has been manipulating Sadie's condition all along. Through his perspective, we learn he prefers Camille to Sadie, describing the first time this vivacious, untamable woman emerged as like discovering gold in a mine. Will's manipulation extends to murder. He killed Aaron years ago when she tried to break their engagement, staging it as an accident by drugging her with Xanax, suffocating her, and placing her body in a car that went into a pond during a snowstorm. More horrifyingly, Will convinced Sadie's alter personality, Camille, to kill Morgan by making her believe Morgan threatened to separate them. He's been using Camille as his unwitting assassin to eliminate problems, including a student who had accused him of sexual harassment. Even Sadie's treatment is a lie. Her pills are merely placebos, cornstarch in empty capsules. As he watches her eagerly take them, he almost laughs at how suggestible she is. When Sadie uncovers the truth, finding Will's hidden money and researching Aaron and Morgan's deaths, Will decides she must be eliminated. He prepares a lethal wine and pill mixture, planning to stage her suicide. Desperate to contact Officer Berg, Sadie takes the suspected poisoned wine and a letter opener while searching for a phone. When caught, Will mockingly confesses to killing Aaron and manipulating Camille into killing Morgan. Their confrontation turns violent as Will attempts to strangle Sadie, describing the intimacy of manual strangulation with disturbing calm. Sadie plays dead, but when she attacks, the drugs have weakened her too much. Just as Will is about to finish her, Imogen appears with a fireplace poker, striking him and giving Sadie the chance to grab a chef's knife. When Will lunges, she plunges it into his chest, watching him die as she tells him he doesn't deserve to live. 1 year after Will's death, ruled self-defense from Imogen's recorded confession, Sadie and the children have built a new life in California. On a rocky beach, she watches Tate explore tide pools while Otto and Imogen climb rocks with their dogs. The family has committed to intensive healing. Sadie meets twice weekly with Beverly, her purple-haired British therapist who helps integrate her alters and process trauma. They all see Bob, a grandfatherly counselor who helps rebuild trust. Otto thrives at an arts academy where his talents are celebrated rather than suppressed. Watching waves transform this former trash dump into beach glass, Sadie sees a metaphor for her own transformation. Each piece tells a story, sharp edges worn smooth by time. Will stole years of her life, but through therapy and her children's love, she's learning to forgive herself. Her protective alters are gradually integrating, bringing their strengths without needing to take over. Like glass becoming treasures, she's becoming whole. Their Pacific home reminds her that even the darkest waters eventually clear, and healing, while not linear, remains possible. What makes this story truly haunting is how it forces us to question, how well do we really know those closest to us? And perhaps more disturbingly, how well do we know ourselves? Will masterfully presents himself as the devoted husband while concealing a manipulative murderer who exploits his wife's mental illness. Sadie's alternate personalities represent the most extreme form of masking, complete dissociation from painful parts of herself. Even Imogen wears hostility to hide her grief and trauma. These masks, whether psychological defense mechanisms or conscious deceptions, both protect and destroy. Each character's facade serves a purpose, shielding vulnerabilities, enabling manipulation, or providing emotional distance. Yet it's only when these masks crack that genuine connection and healing become possible. The most powerful message is that healing comes not from being unbroken, but from acknowledging our brokenness. Like sea glass, transformed by waves, our wounds can become sources of strength when we face them with support. In a world where we all wear masks, lowering these defenses becomes the path to authentic connection and recovery.